Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, joining you on a, what are we at, Thursday morning. The Milwaukee Bucks are somewhat back on the right track after dropping five straight games. They have won three straight, not necessarily impressive wins, all at home against lesser teams, perceptively, but the Bucks are hanging in there, two games out of first place in the Eastern Conference. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. On the other line is the Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Bucks, Jim Ozarski. Jim, you know, they've won three straight. I still have things to panic about. So I don't know. Should we be, like, I've asked this question before, and I'm just going to ask it again off the top. Are the Bucks good? Like, obviously, standings-wise, they're good. They're a winning team. No, only four teams can say that in the Eastern Conference. What's going on there? But, like, are they good? We still, I'm not sure we have the answer to that question yet.
Yeah, I mean, when Jrue Holiday is at full strength and playing 33 minutes, yes, I think they're a good team. Without him, I think they're what they've been, which is kind of middling. You know, And that's going a little bit of a leap of faith because, I mean, really, they only started to figure it out with Jrue, like, right before he went into the health and safety protocol.
Really kind of two games, right? Like, two amazing games. It's about
it. Yeah. So, you know, they had won four straight, but I think it was trending in the right way coming off the losing the 4 of 6. Like, they had, you know, started to kind of roll. So, you know, Sunday against the Clippers, and then following it up Tuesday against Denver, we'll probably, you know, really throw it into focus before the break here, JR. If they lose those games, then I don't know if we could say they're really, like, truly good. But yeah, I mean, they're a winning team. And look, Oklahoma City, Sacramento, Minnesota are terrible. They're the three worst teams in the Western Conference. Or three of the worst, and, you know, the Bucks did what they have to do. They won, and Maybe it'll give them a little bit of momentum going into those bigger games.
Yeah, coming off back-to-back losses against Toronto, I know I said going into the homestand, I was getting optimistic, pipe dream to say 7-0 or whatever, but hopeful that they could at least get off on the right foot and at least split with Toronto. I think it's a pretty bad look for the Bucks to have lost both of those games. I want to talk, obviously, a lot about Jrue Holiday. He's been back on the bench, resumed individual workouts. Sounds like, although we don't really know, that he's getting better, getting closer to playing. My concerns are twofold with Jrue Holiday at this point. We've talked about how when he's back, the Bucks will get back to full strength. That remains true. I'm a little concerned by the limited amount of knowledge we have about his condition. Now, he is under no obligation to talk about it. The team won't talk about it. I get that, privacy. It makes perfect sense to me. But typically when an athlete comes down with this disease, you hear a lot of talk about, oh, I'm feeling fine. The symptoms aren't very bad. I'm getting through it. You know, we'll be back out there really, really soon. We have not heard that. And that might just be his privacy. That might just be how he wants to handle it. Totally respect that. But it doesn't give Bucks fans a lot of evidence that he's going to just hop right back on the court and be full strength. I mean, this is going on a month now, and, well, not quite a month. We're still really only in the 2.5-3 week range here. But at some point, you have to wonder: is you know, did he get a really significant case of this COVID-19, and is he going to be able to help? And then the other side of this is, I think I just need somebody to explain it to me, like I'm 5 years old, why the Bucks would be so torpedoed by losing their third best player. Even though I recognize that everything is built around Jrue Holiday, especially defensively, in terms of how they want to run things this year, but they still have their two best players from last year. They still have, you know, three starters from last year, four starters, I guess, depending on how you look at it. Why is it that Jrue Holiday's loss is causing this team to be stuck in such a grisly holding pattern?
Okay, so really quickly on the Jrue Holiday's actual situation. So you're right. We don't know, and it's up to him to tell us when he's available to the media. He will be required to meet the media once he returns to practice, and we request him. That's just part of the obligation. It'll be up to him to disclose, like Mason Crosby and A.J. Dillon told us they actually got COVID-19 and had variant effects. What we do know is his quarantine did not end until Saturday. So he went into February 8th, and then he was quarantined. He had to stay away from the team to, what, February 21st? So that's significant. That's 12 days at least. So the 21st, he appears on the bench, and Mike Budenholzer says, hey, he can do an individual workout. What does that mean? And part of the process, if you come off quarantine, you must have two individual workouts monitored, supervised by the team, away from the team, or the players, and then cardiac screening. Once you pass all of that, you are allowed to resume team activities. Now, with this current schedule, the Bucks aren't really practicing. They're not really doing shoot-arounds. So, you know, there's a little bit of a window here. Now, you're right. As we record this, you know, the Bucks are going to play tonight against New Orleans. It's conceivable Jrue Holiday is active and able to play tonight. The odds of that to me seem small. Like, I don't know how you can literally go from zero physical activity, which is required for 12 days, a couple of workouts with a coach in the gym, to playing in an NBA game. Like, that doesn't seem feasible to me, right? Like, I feel right. Like he's got to practice a little bit, or maybe he plays, but it's like 6 minutes, you know? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he's Superman and he could play 33. That's where we're at physically with Jrue Holiday. And I think it is individual on when he can return, how much he can play, all that stuff. So, yeah, and it's up to him to tell us, you know. And if he chooses to say, I'd rather not, then that is what it is. Now, to the broader point of, you know, why have the Bucks struggled? Well, JR, tell me what you think about this. I think when the Bucks made the decision to go big three and construct a roster around three players, that weakens the rest of the roster. The depth is not as good. And so when you take away one of those guys, it means way more than years past. If, you know, a Bledsoe or a Hill or whomever were out. It's just, you're not constructed in the same way to handle that. And I think we saw Chris Middleton specifically. Toronto double teamed him. They made his life miserable. He really slumped in that 5-6 game period, maybe cost him an all-star berth. And he even said, he's like, look, I'm handling the ball more than I want. I'm getting way more attention. Like, but that's what happens when you go big three and one of them are gone. And that to me is why, you know, they're just not, you know, spots 4-9 are not as strong as spots 3-10 were a year ago or 2 years ago.
All right. Well, that makes some sense to me. So do you feel like the Bucks are kind of stuck in a holding pattern here? Because they're still working toward, we've talked about how they're working toward sort of this end game, especially defensively. And not having Jrue Holiday out there means you can't make progress. You're basically just trying to get by, which actually isn't even that big a deal at this point because the Bucks are, you know, two games out of first. But at the same time, they're not getting better. They're not getting closer, or so it seems to me, not getting closer to that end point, which means, are they going to have enough time? I mean, March 1st is right around the corner. Are they going to have enough time to get better? Because we have not seen them against good teams play well. And that's fine if it's a process, but it's not fine if you are, you know, 2 weeks away from the end of the season and you're about to play these good teams for real, for real. Do you feel like they're stuck, or have you seen progress even with Jrue Holiday off the floor?
Yeah, I mean, in the broader scope, yeah, I do think they've just been treading water. In that, look, their offense was bad. And playing Sacramento and Minnesota, the numbers look great, but those are bad defensive teams, like the worst in basketball. Like, the Bucks should score 128 points on them. So I don't know really if the offense has figured itself out without Holiday. Defensively, that's interesting, JR. Like, they've creeped back into the top 10 in defensive rating. What does that mean? You know, points per 100 possessions. They were, you know, what, 12th, 13th when this all kind of started? They, I think, 7th or 8th before Holiday went out. So what I will say is maybe the thing to build on is maybe Dante DiVincenzo and Brooke Lopez and Giannis and, you know, Bryn Forbes, like their feet, they're learning how to switch, which is a big part of this. Maybe not sag off as much on that weak side help, contest those threes a little better. Although they're still giving up, I think, the most wide open looks in basketball. They were going to have to learn that anyway and get better at it anyway, even with Holiday. So JR, I think you're right. Holiday's going to make them so much better in that regard. And if they're learning how to do it against better players, because, for instance, you know, DiVincenzo's had to guard who Holiday would guard, or Middleton would have, you know what I mean? So it's reasonable to think that if Holiday is healthy and good to go, they'll be better defensively more quickly. And then at that point, you know, the offense was number one in basketball before he went out. So holding pattern in wins and losses, but maybe there is a light at the end of the tunnel defensively for the Bucks with this.
Yeah. Having Drew Holiday off the floor complicates this upcoming sort of benchmark deadline, whatever you want to call it, that they're about to hit, where they could theoretically sign him for an additional year. Holiday could elect to become a free agent after the 2021 season. But I think when the Bucks, given what the Bucks committed to get him, they probably either feel strongly that he'd be willing to stay on longer term, especially with Giannis under the Supermax contract, or maybe they even discussed it point blank. I'm not sure. With him out, and, you know, without a lot of access to players, I don't know if there's any way to speculate what's going to happen next with Drew Holiday, if he's going to wait till the end of the year, if he's going to, you know, decide to sign this right away. I don't know, but, like, I could see there, as this season continues to be less than what Bucks fans have seen the last 2 years, I could see fans getting a little bent out of shape about that. Like, this is, okay, the Bucks are just okay. Drew Holiday's now suddenly weighing whether or not he wants to stay or not. I mean, they spent a lot of capital to get him. Suddenly, are they gonna have lost that chance for a year in which the Bucks were, you know, the fourth seed in the East? Like, what are some of your thoughts on that upcoming situation?
Yeah, so you know, they are able to negotiate actually beginning today. JR, today they were not really allowed to talk to him about an extension. There's a rule where you have to wait 6 months. Well, because of the screwed up calendar, November 23rd was when the trade was official. Obviously, it's not 6 months since then, but it kind of is in the NBA calendar. So they're allowed to talk to him starting Thursday about an extension. It could go 4 years up to, I think, 139. Close to 135 all told. Drew Holiday said in December, you know, he'd like to be here and grow with it. I mean, we wrote over at jsonline.com how him and his wife Lauren really settled in quickly to Milwaukee and wanting to get involved in the community and kind of look. They've got a young family. He's 30. Going to be 31. He's at a point in his career. Does he really want to start moving? Especially, look, this pandemic's not going away. Is he a guy who's going to want to keep moving to cities? So I think he will opt out, JR. But I think that could be either a negotiation tactic or a formality. Like, yes, he could say, well, I'm going to opt out and become an unrestricted free agent. Well, the Bucks can only offer $4,135. Like that, like the money can't change. Where the wiggle room is like guaranteed, like when money becomes guaranteed on certain dates, and maybe the incentives or the bonuses are off of, you know, like workouts instead of going to the finals, right? Where like it's like the money's the same, but like there's some negotiation that can take place there. My guess is John Horst didn't make this move, JR, without either the expectation that Drew Holiday would sign long term, or the strong belief, or even the team's willingness to give that to him. Like, you don't trade all those draft picks to let the guy walk. Like that would be just a disaster, and maybe a fireable offense. to be honest. So, yeah, I don't. That doesn't mean it's a foregone conclusion. We may not hear any of this until July. He could sign tomorrow. as you're listening to this podcast, you could be following JR and myself on Twitter and seeing that he signed. Like, but I do think, you know, how he has said he's felt about the organization in this short time, what they've done for him and Lauren and his family, he was very complimentary of. We know he likes his teammates and vice versa. I would imagine the team is taking very good care of him in this COVID situation. So as all of that's going on, look, the MVP is here for five more years. Chris Middleton's here for three more years. Like, where's he going to go that gives him the same situation plus $30 million a year? That's a small list. So, yeah. Again, not a foregone conclusion, JR, but I think Bucks fans shouldn't worry that he won't extend, even if he chooses to sort of wait till later in the calendar.
Yeah. Speaking of Chris Middleton, let's talk about the All-Star game. At first, I think like everybody, I saw that Chris Middleton was not named an All-Star reserve, and I immediately thought that was ridiculous. Coming off of two straight All-Star appearances, second best player on one of the best teams in the East, he was absolutely having a lights out season at the start of the year. I think he was on track really for his best season yet. But of course, the nature, we didn't know if there was going to be an All-Star game this year, so voting probably began a little bit later than it would have normally. Chris Middleton happened to not be playing his best basketball the last couple weeks, and he's not among the reserves. I was upset about that like everybody else. Then you kind of get to look at it. You wonder, who are they going to take out? There's the biggest arguments. There's a few guys on that list that are from losing teams. You know, Julius Randle, Nikola Vucevic, Zach LaVine, but like those guys deserve to be All-Stars, and a lot of guys who were All-Stars last year, like Middleton, that aren't on there this year, like Bam Adebayo or Domantas Sabonis, who was definitely deserving this year, Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler's not on the All-Star team again this year, is he? So, no. It's not a disastrous snub. They should just expand these rosters is what they should do. But how do you look at it? You feel like Chris Middleton got a raw deal there, or does it make sense to you?
No, it makes sense. Because you're right, it is a first half award, and you're right, the voting probably, let's see, it's NBA coaches, so let's be real, they probably started their voting, look, in a 7-game stretch from when Jrue Holiday left, you know, Chris Middleton slumped 19 points, under 5.9 rebounds, 4.7 assists, but which is a good line.
Yeah, those numbers are pretty low for All-Star, though.
But for him, yeah, he was at 4 turnovers a game, field goal percentage, three-point percentage, free throw percentage, all cratered off of where he currently is. So, it was, I think, bad timing in that way for him to have that stretch. And while Jason Tatum is still doing what he's doing in Boston, I think Vucevic, look, Joel Embiid's a center. Sure. Obviously, he's not going to play. I think they were going to pick a center, right? Whether it was Sabonis or Vucevic. So, well, now you're in this weird front court deal. It makes sense. I mean, that's the whole thing. And I think Chris was pretty diplomatic about it. I think maybe he feels a little worse if he didn't already have two under his belt. But yeah, I think it was a combination of the slump-ish. These other guys are playing really well. So, no, I'm not surprised. Is he deserving? Sure. I mean, you look at the total first half. I mean, he's tracking to be the ninth guy to ever do, 50, 40, 90. Career highs in a lot of ways. But in terms of this instance, I think it was a unfortunate perfect storm for Chris Middleton.
Here, I'm going to have my cake and eat it too here and complain that we shouldn't even have an All-Star game. I don't understand it. It's happening March 7th, sort of obviously a late announcement. Adam Silver was one of the leaders of sort of the sports involvement in sort of building awareness at how bad this coronavirus pandemic was back in March. I really thought Adam Silver handled it very, very deftly. And I don't understand how the same guy can say, even though we're not filling arenas, now is a good time to fly everybody's stars to one location and have an All-Star game. Obviously, it's a TV event. That's fine. It's a TV event for the vast majority of Americans anyway. This isn't But who needs an All-Star game right now? We didn't have a Pro Bowl. We certainly didn't have a Major League Baseball All-Star game. No one is missing this stuff in the midst of everything else that we're missing. So I'm a little confused. I can't imagine ratings are so irresistible and undeniable that the NBA would be willing to take this risk. And it isn't about them playing the game as it is moving people like Giannis, you know, to another location and have him fly again. And, you know, like, nobody needs that right now. So I'm really confused why we're doing this. I think it's honestly, I think it's a terrible look for the NBA. And maybe, it, you know, I'm guessing nothing happens and we're fine and we forget it ever happened. But I don't get it. Are you, what do you think about it?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I don't understand it. I think the players all... Now, look, the union had to agree for it to be played.
Sure, yeah.
So somewhere in there, you know, some kind of message was sent as to what it means. And I don't know if Turner behind the scenes threatened some sort of breach of contract or some sort of like, well, we're not getting this, you know, what should be a three-day TV event. So we're not going to pay X. Like, because that's the thing. The union had to agree to it. So why, when all of the players publicly said they didn't want to do it?
Right. Like, I mean, if the players aren't into it, why should I as a fan be like, oh, man, it's going to be Giannis versus LeBron, except both guys said they don't want to be there. So what in the world am I watching for?
Right. So there's got to be, which, look. That's business, and they're not going to throw Turner under the bus. Turner's for sure not going to put that out publicly to, you know, and their own broadcasters were like, this is stupid. So, yeah, I don't get it. I mean, what the NBA, what would be an absolute disaster is if of those players tests positive for COVID-19 in that sort of one-day mini bubble.
Total meltdown for the NBA. I can't imagine them wanting to take this risk because of that.
Right. And it's, and look, I, you know, you just don't know. You don't know what can happen and you don't know what, maybe not test positive, but look, the Bucks, Jalen Adams, he's in the health and safety protocol. He had a legal incident, you know, with Milwaukee Police Department, the Friday of Oklahoma City. And he's in the health and safety protocol. Is it because he tested positive? I don't know. But my guess is when you're in ride shares and then in police departments and all this stuff, like that's a violation of the quote unquote protocol. Like they need to make sure you're okay. Who's to say? I'm not saying it's a legal thing, but like, I mean, there's just so many things that can happen that could force a player into the protocol. And then you got the contact tracing. It's just, yeah, I don't get it. I mean, the ratings, maybe it'll be great because it's the only thing on TV that day. In a, you know.
So what? We went through 4 months with no sports on TV. We can live.
Yeah, who? I mean, I don't even know who loves watching the All-Star game anyway.
Right? Like, it's just a dunk fest. Like, it's fine. It's fun. But it's not one of the, like, five biggest sporting events of the year. Like, it's not that kind of ratings.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't think the players get it. I don't think you're going to see... Maybe the first timers bring it some juice, but like when LeBron and Giannis are like, man, I'm not excited about this. You know, Anthony Davis obviously going to play. Kevin Durant has been hurt and in quarantine so much. Is he really going to go all out? I mean, the Sixers probably don't want Joel Embiid, you know, doing a whole lot strenuous with his back issues. Like it just feels wrong in so many ways, JR. You know, the dunk contest is gonna be at halftime. Who's coming in for that? Like, it's just, you know, I mean, maybe Bryn Forbes or Bobby Portis show up for the 3-point contest. Maybe they're, you know, selected for that too. Maybe not. Maybe the 3-point contest is only the guys who are in the game. We don't know that either. So maybe Giannis will, you know what? Maybe that'll get people excited, Jared. What do you think?
Put Giannis in the three-point competition. Absolutely. I want to see it. How many will he hit the rim with? And, you know, maybe they just have like a combined three-point dunk showcase. Like, you know, you get the guys who can dunk, the guys who get 3-point. You gotta find that middleman. The most average NBA All-Star is going to win this competition, the joint three-point dunk competition.
It'd be so – I mean, might as well just go all the way and have fun with it, right? Like, I mean – LeBron, Giannis, Joel Embiid, I'm trying to think of who doesn't. I mean, those guys. I mean, LeBron's shooting at a good clip, but you know, that now that could be interesting. Now, none of those guys want to do the dunk contest anymore. It's like it's something you do when you're like a first or second year player.
Yeah.
But you know, the 3-pointer, the skills, like that could be fun. I guess that would pique my interest then.
Yeah.
They did something fun.
Yeah, I don't know, man. All that stuff is good stuff to have on the background when you're out at a bar. No one's doing that right now. This is just a, I don't know. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about Giannis, who finished number 2 in the voting this year. He does not get to draft a team. No offense to Giannis. It is not his strength, and therefore I shouldn't be too worried that he is unable to draft his own team this year. But he is he's playing better, it seems like. And in fact, I've started to see some early chatter, like, you know, maybe we shouldn't just hand the MVP award to Joel Embiid. You know, maybe Giannis can get back in there for a third straight. I happen to think that's preposterous and never going to happen, just because I just don't think voters are going to award a third straight MVP unless the Bucks do something extraordinary here in the second half. But it does seem like he's playing better. He's making his free throws. It's kind of a bizarro, a new twist to the whole thing. What are you seeing from him that seems to have, I mean, maybe, is my perception correct that he seems to have turned a corner? And what are you seeing that's causing that to happen?
Well, no, he has. So while Chris Middleton clearly struggled without Jrue Holiday, Giannis went the other way. Look at this stat line, JR, since Holiday's been out. So 9 games, 32.3 points per game, 13.2 rebounds, 6.3 assists, nearly 2 steals, nearly 2 blocks. Shooting 54% from the floor, 75% from the free throw line.
Incredible. The whole new world.
And what did we say at the start of the year when we talked about Giannis improvements and all these things? And I said, JR, if he could just get back to where he was 3 years ago as a free throw shooter, he'll average 30 a game. And guess what? He's shooting 75% and he's averaging 30 a game. Like, it's like, those are free points that he was just leaving on the table.
Well, was it the Kings? Who, I mean, he went to the line, what, 24 times? Like, the Kings were heck of Giannis. Was it that game?
Phoenix, 17 of 21. Sacramento, 19 of 24. Double-digit attempts in first game in Toronto against Minnesota. So, yes, he is making them. His only sort of off night was the second night against the Raptors, 7 of 13. But really, the month of February, he has been – really good at that, and that's a big deal, right? For him, three-point shooting 28%, not quite where he wants to be. You know, he wants to get to 30. I mean, I'm sure he'll say he wants to be 40, but I think, you know, pull it back, 30% as a three-point shooter will work. So he has found something, you know, and it's now, in terms of the MVP thing, that maybe we'll touch on that during the All-Star break, JR, when we want to kind of review the first half. And I've got long thoughts on Giannis and MVP and voter fatigue and what all that means, but or could mean. But you're right, though. I mean, he has found a gear without Holiday. And again, I think Bucks fans should be encouraging, because Jrue Holiday isn't the type of third of the big three that's going to come in and say, okay, I still want to score 20 a game, so Giannis don't shoot it 20 times. Like, Jrue Holiday is only going to feed into this and only make it easier. So, he has been on a tear since Holiday's been out, and really this month of February.
Giannis just passed on, what was that? Was that Tuesday night? Passed Bobby Dandridge for fourth in all-time scoring in Bucks history. I believe Giannis is going to get that mark all the way. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, of course, is the number one scorer in Bucks history, and I believe throughout the course of this contract, Giannis is going to be number one in almost every category he can get his hands on: points, rebounds, assists, blocks, even steals. But Bobby Dandridge, I wanted to talk about him a little bit, because I don't know if it's a secret, but we're working on some stuff for the 50th anniversary of the Bucks' 1971 NBA championship, the only championship in franchise history. They were in their third year of existence. It's kind of crazy that they've gone another half century without without a second title, but that is the case. We've been looking at some of the games, some of the moments, talked to some of the people from that time, and Bobby Nattridge does not get his due. I don't know how much work you've done looking at him specifically, but he's a guy who didn't have his number retired until 2015. Franchise went a long time between retired jerseys. They took actually a while to get Kareem back here for a jersey retirement in the early 90s, 1993. And then Bobby Nattridge was the next number. They, you know, a lot of guys like Brian Winters, I mean, no offense, those are good players, of course, but like Bobby Nattridge, the third player on a team that had Kareem and Oscar Robertson, key component to those teams. He was a draft steal in the fourth round, the same draft where the Bucks got Kareem. And, you know, putting up tons of numbers. He's on the all-time leaderboard in a bunch of places. Had a really successful run with the Bullets, with the Washington Bullets, after he was with the Bucks. He went to two finals with that team as well. I just want to give him a shout-out because, like, I know we know who Oscar Robertson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar are, and we know who the stars are of the subsequent Bucks teams with Don Nelson. I think Bobby Nattridge gets totally lost in the shuffle because he was outshined by brighter stars. But that guy's a stud, man. Very similar in my mind to Chris Middleton. I don't know if their games are necessarily similar, but just in terms of respect factor, this guy's awesome. And so obviously he's going to get passed. Giannis is going to pass everybody on this list, But I just want to give him a shout out. He's awesome, and I'm glad that I've done a little reading about him. I'm glad he's going to be part of our coverage here.
Yeah, he's nicknamed the Greyhound?
That is Eddie Doucette's name for him. My understanding is that wasn't something he necessarily loved, but that was announcer Eddie Doucette, who had a nickname for everybody. Actually, I got to talk to him recently. Can't wait to unveil that interview down the road here. But yes, the Greyhound was the nickname there.
Yeah, so, I mean, from his second year through his second year in the league with Milwaukee through 1979, which is second year in Washington, you know, four all-star games, average almost 20 points a game.
Has more points than any other player. This is according to Wikipedia, so for whatever that's worth. More points in the NBA Finals than any other player in the 70s, including Kareem. That blows my mind. Four finals appearances.
And this is obviously before the three-point shot, too. So, you know, that's no joke. I you know, all defensive team member and all rookie team member and all NBA player. I mean, that's something Chris Middleton hasn't yet done. So, yeah, I think Bobby Dandridge is one of those like hall of the very goods, you know, and I
absolutely
think, yeah, like it's just and now in Bucks franchise history, clearly one of the best players in franchise history. But I think because it's an era where, you know, I mean, look, they won a title in his third year, went to a finals in his fifth year. And then, you know, what happened with this team after that? They were good, but not the same. So I think it's just kind of one of those guys who got lost in the history, if you will. And you're right. It kind of took a long time. I was at the Pearl Jam concert, JR, when Jeff Ament, who just loves Bobby Dandridge, like pulled Dandridge's number to the rafters.
Yes.
It kind of went viral a little bit on Twitter when I put that out back then. And I guess, you know, Jeff definitely gets credit for being the first one, so to speak, to retire Bobby Dandridge's number. And kind of a fun pop culture moment there. But, you know, he you're right. I think basketball people appreciate what he did when he did it. And, it's especially in the context of the Chris Middleton conversation, right? Like, it's not easy to be an all-star. If you do it twice, three times, four times, that's not easy. It means something when you look back at a career. And Bobby Dandridge was one of those guys. And Giannis is the fact that, you know, he held one of those spots in the top five. I think, look, as Giannis goes up the list, like Sidney Moncrief. I know Bucks fans know Sidney Moncrief. I know Bucks fans know Marcus Johnson, but that's part of, I guess, the fun of, and Giannis doesn't know he's doing this, but it like when he passes these players, it brings them back to like this type of thing. Like, look, we know Michael Redd, but let's be honest, JR, a 14-year-old Bucks fan has no idea what Michael Redd was.
That's entirely true. It's sad, but it's true.
Like, yeah, I mean, and then when he gets to Glenn Robinson, the 16-year-old Bucks fan, like, Glenn Robinson, the guy in Dallas, or, you know,
I'm saying,
like, so that's part of it too. Obviously Kareem is different in that way, but for an organization like the Bucks, like it kind of reshines a light on guys like Bobby Dandridge, Marcus Johnson, going forward that, you know, maybe can be reintroduced, if you will. So I don't know. I think it's a good thing, and I'm, you know, good on you for bringing him to the podcast today.
Yeah. So you've brought up one of the most painful things in my history inadvertently. You're at that Pearl Jam show. That's the one at the Bradley Center, right?
Yeah.
In 2015. My good friends will know that I swear to God, it's on my maybe five biggest regrets in life that I did not elect to go to that show. You know, I had young kids at the time. I just didn't feel like trying to put in the effort. And my number one Pearl Jam album is Yield. It was their last great album, released in 99, I believe. Absolute banger. And they played it front to back. They've been doing that with different albums. I think maybe just two albums on that tour, but they played Yield front to back. I regret not being there so much. It pains me. I love my 90s rock, especially 90s grunge, especially Pearl Jam. I will never, every time it's brought up, there's a little pang of sorrow in my heart. I've listened to the bootleg, but yes, just, previous JR made some terrible decisions, and one of them was not going to that show. Very, very sad. But Dandridge did get his due, did get his jersey hung in the rafters. The Bucks have since retired Marcus Johnson's number, who's another guy that we're going to be talking about, you know, for obvious reasons. He's part of the Bucks broadcast. Giannis is going to start passing some of Marcus Johnson's numbers too. And it is cool to go back and relive those guys. I can't wait till we unfurl some of this 1971 stuff. You're going to be at the heart of it. You're doing, I know, a ton of it. There's a lot I've learned about that team, about you know, the stars, but also some players you know maybe we don't talk about, Dandridge maybe being one of them. So I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be a good time here as we get closer to the end of the season.
Yeah. Any
other last thoughts before I let you go? Anybody else you wanted to highlight? The bench is still kind of up and down, but I mean, Bryn Forbes hit 5 3-pointers on Tuesday night, so that was fun. Anything else that you want to bring to the forefront before I let you go?
You know, I'm a little curious, you know, to see if DJ Augustine can keep, look, is he, you know, lighting it up? No, but I think the move to the starting lineup and Forbes moving back to the bench, I think, was a smart decision by Mike Budenholzer. You know, if Holiday can't really play, I'm curious to see what that lineup does against a team like the Clippers, you know, after they've kind of been rolling for four games. You know, they've got New Orleans tonight. They lost to them in New Orleans before. You'd think the Bucks should win that game. So that's what I'm interested in going forward is okay, the DJ Augustin thing at point, can it continue against a good team? And then, you know, does him getting that confidence and kind of a role when he goes back to the bench, I don't know. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe the decision is Dante DiVincenzo goes to the bench and Jrue Holiday is not your point. I don't know. That's an interesting thing that I'm curious to see develop and where Mike Budenholzer goes with that. Obviously, we're a little ways away from such decisions, but I find that concept interesting to me. And then, yeah, JR, I don't know if you want to make this call. I'm going to surprise you with this right now.
Uh-oh.
This week, or if we want to do it for All-Star Week when there's no games. And, I mean, what about Twitter question Q&A from our hashtag PFP listeners? I'd love to run a couple Q&As if I don't know if next week is a good time or if, like, that's a good off week to, like, just get a couple questions and a dialogue with the audience.
Yeah, well, I think any time is a good time. We can reservoir some of them if we have to, but let's get that started. If you have a question for Jim Ozarski, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, by all means, send it our way on Twitter. Use the hashtag PFP so we know what you're talking about. And that can be directed right to me at JR Radcliffe on Twitter. That's JRRADCLIFFE. Don't forget that E. Or Jim Ozarski on Twitter. It's JIMOWCZARSKI. Should be able to find him even if you can't spell it, right? So just look us up. Send us a question. We'll be happy to answer those. We have not had any questions yet this year, but also haven't called for them. So let's do it. Let's get the people. I wonder what's on their minds as opposed to just right. What's on my mind. So
yeah, and make sure to ask JR why he likes Pepsi, because that's
oh my gosh,
that's a problem for me, and I feel like I will tune him out if he just tells me. So I think if one of you guys can ask him directly, what's up?
Let me tell you, real talk, Jim Ozarski, real pandemic talk. It's a problem for me right now, too, because I have been drinking it like a fish, and it has caused me to expand beyond my normal parameters. So I have been trying desperately to cut it out of my diet, and it is hard. And I've been trying to make, concessions some days with, some days without. I know this is the dumbest thing, and I know that, like, addiction to soda isn't real, but it is real enough, so I actually am looking at a half-consumed bottle of Pepsi on the table right now. I'm going to drink it. That's today. I didn't drink it any yesterday. I won't drink any tomorrow. We're gonna get through this. But Pepsi and I go hand in hand. I will hear no arguments as to why there's a substance better on earth than Pepsi. It's my favorite thing. I probably love my children more. I just can't say that with certainty at the moment. So if you get a chance to, jsonline.com, Jim wrote about the bench, looking to get some spark off of there. Saw some extra run from Thanasis this week that helped the Bucks win a game, I believe. And just in general, lots of coverage at jsonline.com. Wrote about the sort of special bond between Giannis and Karl Anthony Towns of the Timberwolves. Both know what it's like to lose a parent. Karl Anthony Towns recently lost his mom to COVID-19. So they kind of had a really cool moment after the game that Jim wrote about, which I know has kind of gone viral too. It's something you've probably seen, but just really cool stuff. Giannis, the person, I think, kind of comes into sharper focus for certainly for Bucks fans, but also nationally. I think people are starting to get to know that this guy's just a really good dude and a really fun guy. Still a kid at heart, and has just some really kind instincts. So that's a good sign for Bucks fans. All right, Jim, I think we're good to go. Unless you got anything else.
Nope, that's it, JR. Looking forward to hearing from you all, and closing in on the halfway point. Hey, JR, it's going fast.
Oh man, yeah, I can't believe we're almost at the end of February. It's nuts, but yeah. But yes, use that hashtag PFP, Point Forward Podcast, to let us know what you think. Thanks for tuning into the Point Forward Podcast, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel chatter about the Milwaukee Bucks. We will join you again next week. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.